Raymond integrated the new corporate safety rules into an intensified top-down culture of command management emanating from Exxon's headquarters. At his yearly meeting with Wall Street analysts, he conspicuously announced Exxon's safety record before enumerating the corporation's profit performance. He described his safety drive as a proxy for more far-reaching changes that would ultimately manifest themselves on the bottom line. "The only way you could be successful in the area of safety is through disciplined commitment and day-to-day management of the business." In 1992, the year of Sidney Rissow's death, Exxon unveiled to its employees and executives a universal new management regime, the Operations Integrity Management System, or OIMS. More final binders than you can possibly imagine every single goddamn aspect of how we operate, as a former executive put it, so there could be no excuses. OIMS involved framework expectations about 11 elements. These included the basic challenge of risk assessment and management. OIMS Section 2.1 declared, "Risk is managed by identifying hazards, assessing consequences and probabilities." 5 subsections of this rule outline how to achieve this goal through the use of data, documentation, and outside evaluators. The system also addressed human frailty in the workplace. Section 5.5 prescribed that Exxon employees should routinely identify and eliminate their at-risk behaviors and those of their co-workers, while ensuring that human factors, workforce engagement, and leadership behaviors are addressed. The legacy of catastrophic failure in Prince William Sound proved, nonetheless, to be persistent. Fortune had ranked the corporation as America's 6th most admired before the accident. Afterward, it fell to 110th. Telephone operators in the Exxon credit card department heard so much abuse from angry customers who used the Valdez accident to vent their spleens that the corporation made counselors available to console its employees. Many years after the grounding, the corporation's public affairs department organized focus groups with North American opinion leaders. When the moderator pronounced the word Exxon and asked for a free association response, more than half of the participants blurted out Valdez. Initially, Raymond sought to address the claims of Alaskan fishermen, cannery workers, and small business owners affected by the Valdez spill by handing out $300 million in compensation without asking for legal releases. Soon he chose to defend Exxon's position by fighting lawsuits filed by the state of Alaska, the federal government, Alaskan businesses, and individuals. Raymond rejected all efforts to extract punitive damages from Exxon. He accepted in principle that his corporation was liable for actual damages in Alaska where such claims could be proven. He settled virtually all of those claims by 1994. But punitive judgments levied as a deterrent or as a source of emotional satisfaction, Raymond would fight as long as it took. It was a very tough time for them, but increasingly Exxon's leadership group concluded that the anti-Exxon campaigning after the Valdez spill was unfair, recalled Kathleen Cooper, who joined Exxon as its chief economist in 1990. "They paid compensation immediately, sooner than some companies might have. At some point we said, 'We've spent a lot of money. We've done it on a proactive basis, and we just can't keep going. We need to say, this is it.' That is what Raymond was saying, and I think the whole company was behind him." The seeming virulence of Exxon's permanent opposition, Greenpeace and other environmentalists, dissident shareholders, Manhattan and Hollywood liberals, and assorted magical thinkers about wind and solar power, as Exxon's executives tended to view those who believed renewable sources could meet America's energy requirements anytime soon, strengthened the solidarity among Exxon's besieged executives. Gradually, they returned to the operation of their oil and gas business for the profit of their shareholders, and they found a setting more compatible with their Alamo attitudes. They moved to Texas.